Hello, I'm Nigel Reed, and welcome to Cricket Central. On this edition, the race is on, which four teams will make it to the IPL playoffs in the final week of the regular season. Mike Hussey or Shane Watson, which big-hitting Aussie would you have in your fantasy team? Plus, changing the guard, Kirsten steps down as South African coach, but is his deputy ready for the challenges ahead? All that and more on today's Cricket Central. As usual, there is no shortage of informed opinion. The majority of it comes from my regular sparring partners, former Canadian international batsman Zubin Sukari, and alongside him, cricket writer and broadcaster Faraz Sarwat. Gentlemen, we know the math. 5 into 4 doesn't go. There are 5 teams vying for 4 places in the IPL playoffs, just about a week away now. We'll get on to which teams might make it and which teams might be going home in a little while. But let's talk about the big match of the weekend. Rajasthan Royals up against Chennai Super Kings, 1 and 2. This could actually be a dress rehearsal for the final itself.
Yes, that's quite right. The Rajasthan Royals, I think, have maybe surprised a few people to have gone as far as they've gone in this tournament, undefeated at home. They look a very good unit, very well led, and I think that has actually kept them ahead of the pack. So they're very well placed to reach the finals, I would think.
Now, Chennai have held most before them so far this season, and yet Rajasthan Royals have a unique record in IPL. When it comes to chasing totals, they're 100%. They know exactly what they're doing, and they've done it again against the best team in the league.
Credit to them. You know, Rajasthan has played some fantastic cricket in the last little while. There's talk about how they go about their team, and they've had a good bunch of players for the last little while, and it's good to see them knock off the top team.
Yeah, the interesting thing here, though, is that this wasn't a cakewalk for them, right? The match seemed actually lost, and then it took a bit of brilliance from Shane Watson to pull them out. And of course, in the end, when you look at the scorecard, it looks like they won at a canter with, you know, plenty of balls to spare. But if he wasn't that brilliant, then maybe it wouldn't have happened. But then the question is that what makes Rajasthan a great team? Is that they have the confidence in one or two of their players that they can pull out in innings like that. But at the end of the day, you just look at a scorecard and you say one team won, one team lost. But there's always obviously more to it than that. And if it was going to happen in a game, it's good that it happened against a team like Chennai.
Now, Rajasthan took some chances in the chase. They knew what they were going to do. And as Faraz said, all's well that ends well. But they sent in Faulkner number 3, the youngster, the teenager, Sanju at number 4. They both perished. Suddenly they're 3 down with less than 20 on the ball. They held Watson back, and it was obviously a calculated risk. Listening to the commentators, they were bamboozled. They didn't know what was going on. In the end, the strategy worked. Dravid stays there. Watson comes in, starts belting the ball around in a match when Chennai themselves hadn't scored a 6 in their entire innings.
Yeah, I don't think they scripted it that well. I think it backfired, to be honest.
So they got away with it?
I think so. I mean, it was a tough wicket to bat on, and I would have liked to have seen something like Brad Hodge, who plays well, can be smart about the game, and maybe guide them through the 6 overs of pace or 8 overs of pace and just kind of get the 40-50 with no wickets, and then get your Watson in at number 4, keep him where he was, and then you bring the young guys coming in when the ball starts, you know, doing a little bit less.
How much were Chennai culpable of their own demise? Because they got off to a great start. They were 80 on the board without a wicket down, and then 3 wickets go down, bang, 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 and suddenly the momentum is lost.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen in a game like this where you have two very motivated teams. And, you know, the ebb and flow of cricket is part of any game, whether it's a test match or a T20 game. So Chennai start off very well, and that gives them maybe a sense of complacency. And then suddenly, when a bit of a collapse happens or a couple of overs don't go your way, there isn't the time to recover. And the game can get away from you very quickly. 1 or 2 over 6, 7, 8 balls makes a difference. So
one of the interesting dynamics of this game, and the commentators mentioned it, and it was obvious for all to see, and it was to do with the state of the pitch that they were playing on. When Rajasthan began the chase, we saw slips, we saw a gully, we saw almost test match conditions for a little while when Holder was steaming in from one end, for example. I'm not sure whether that puts a smile on your face, Faraz, as a fan of the longer form of the game, but they were talking about quote-unquote
proper cricket for a few overs.
For a few overs, you had some proper cricket. No, I mean, you're right. I mean, I actually like seeing the slips in there. I like the ball beating the bat, and it calls for a batsman to bring in all his skills. But you know, the one edge that this type of cricket might have on a test match, when the ball is doing a bit and you have the slips in, is that in a test match, a batsman may just try to survive that period and not bother himself with scoring. But in this form of the game, that's not an option. You have to score in spite of the fact that the ball is doing something and the slips are in there. So it makes for interesting cricket, I would say.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Watson's contribution, because we've seen a game where two of the predominant players in IPL are in direct opposition. Big hitting Australians, Mike Hussey, right up there at the top of the list in terms of runs scored so far in IPL 2013. And Watson, of course, who continually proves his worth, not only with the bat, but with the ball as well, a supreme all-rounder. Not that that's a surprise, but let me ask you, you've got one choice and you can have one or the other. You can have Hussey or you can have Watson for your fantasy team, Zoob, for 2014. Yeah. Based on what you've seen this year and over the years from these two, which one do you take?
I think
and
if you
why?
Factor in the bowling, then you're going to have to give Watson a tug. You know, he's not like he's just a part-time bowler. He bowls well. He bowled well today. He's bowled well in games. He's got that kind of wicket-taking ability. But if you put that aside and just go batting to batting, you'd probably want Watson in. But I think if you look at how consistent Hussey is, he plays spin well. He runs hard between the wickets. He's consistent. He's the highest run scorer in the tournament. So I'd have to kind of give the edge to Mike Hussey, as much as I like Watson.
So do you take Mr. Cricket or do you take Mr. All-Rounder? It's almost an impossible choice, which is, of course, why I asked the question.
Yeah, I mean, and both bring a lot to the table, and they're different types of batsmen. Watson, I think, is actually I enjoy watching him more. You know, the big hits are clean, they're powerful, the ball sails into the stands. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of winning a game, I would probably rather have Mike Hussey in the side. I think Hussey is a more complete batsman. There's some complexity to his game. He has different gears. He can buckle down. He can, you know, take the ones and twos. He can play the ball at angles, and he can also hit the big shots if you need him to. I think he's a smarter cricketer probably too, with his batting. But that doesn't take anything away from what Watson does. Obviously, he's a special player. But if you really had to pick one, I would go with Mike Hussey.
So now we have five teams chasing four places. Chennai, we know, are there. Rajasthan, with this win, are there as well, which really leaves two from three. Mumbai Indians, who one would expect to be there again. Royal Challengers Bangalore, of course, with Chris Gayle and Virat Kohli. And then there's the surprise package. But hanging around, the expansion Sunrisers franchise, and they've come to the party to play, and they've proved competitive in their first year.
And they have a bit of momentum going into the last few games. And if you look at RCB kind of sputtering a little bit, losing today again, you know, I have a feeling they're going to get knocked out. Hyderabad doesn't have much to lose. They're just kind of playing good cricket now. They're enjoying themselves out there, whereas the pressure's heavily on the big guys. Kohli hasn't fired in the last few games. Gayle was struggling today. Not to say that they can't do it. They're obviously good enough.
We talk about Gayle struggling. That's a comparative term. When you look at a guy who's got, 500 runs again and all the big six hits again this year. I mean, there was that one world record innings that we've spoken about on this show, but even so, he is, and we've spoken about, you know, Watson and Hussey here, when we're talking about batsmen who really perform in this form of the game, perhaps he is the supreme master, perhaps he's above both of them.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Gayle, and we've talked about him in the past in other contexts too, which is that it's almost, for me, when I look at him, he's a feast or famine type of player. Either he's going great guns or it's not really coming off.
Well, that's very true, and historically that's what he's done. He's either gone for a duck or one, or he's scored 100, but we've seen in this series sort of 30s and 40s, which is kind of not really Chris Gayle.
And some of those 30s or 40s, I mean, if you look at the strike rate, the strike rate is thereabouts. It's fine, but it's not Chris Gayle's strike rate, right? I mean, we expect it to be, you know, in the 150s, if not higher. When he gets those 30s, 40s, they're kind of just about, you know, 100, a little over 100, maybe even a little under 100. I think today he was under 100. But when he's gone on and played those longer innings, sometimes the start is a bit slow. And then when he kicks on, it's the end where he's kind of really smashed it and, you know, the strike rate goes haywire. But, you know, as Zoob said, he may have sputtered a little bit in the past few games, but that doesn't mean that when, you know, they come into a playoff type game where it's do or die, that he doesn't come off and perform. So, you know, the form is kind of up and down a bit, but in this format, I think he's always a threat. I mean, you can never say that the corner has been turned and Chris Gayle is no longer a threat for the rest of the IPL. He will always be a threat if he's in that 11.
So Zoop reckons that Sunrisers look like they might be the odd man out. Would you go along with that? And I mean, it's barely believable that we could be talking about the playoffs without RCB and therefore without Gayle and without Coley, but it could still happen.
It'll actually make the IPL quite interesting, in my view, if RCB aren't there. I mean, if for nothing else, just to see Virat Kohli's reaction at, you know, the last game that they lose. So I would think that would make it kind of interesting. And of course, it's always a good story when you have the expansion team or the new team, you know, defy the odds and make the final four. So I think that would make the tournament more interesting, and particularly if you still keep the Rajasthans and the Chennais in the hunt for the title. I think in the final four, it's good to have an underdog in there like the Sunrisers.
Don't forget, you can catch all the action on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. This is Cricket Central.
Now's your chance to witness one of the most exciting leagues in sports. See some of the greatest players in cricket take center stage. Experience the intensity of Indian Premier League. Just subscribe now to Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online. See it live and in HD. Who will win the battle for Pepsi IPL 2013 supremacy? Visit sportsnet.ca/world for details on how to subscribe. Presented by CIBC.
Welcome back to Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid alongside Zubin Zakari and Faraz Sarwat. The IPL playoffs fast approaching, and they're approaching in a familiar fashion for the Mumbai Indians. Generally one of the all-star teams, if you like, who expect to be in the postseason. It's something we've mentioned on this show before, that they've never actually won the Indian Premier League, which takes a bit of explaining in itself. We also, on previous editions of Cricket Central, discussed the role of Ricky Ponting, or the gamble that appeared not to pay off. But I've noticed some comments coming out this week from players who actually are on the field who are saying he's taken himself out of the lineup in terms of leading the team on the field, but he's still doing a very good motivating job behind the scenes. Now, maybe that's just fluff and maybe it's publicity because they're paying him a lot of money, but at the same time, you can't argue with Ponting's experience and the fact that he's been a winner all his life. So in terms of motivating behind the scenes and getting into these players' heads that they can actually go on and win something as opposed to just be contenders, maybe something that we'll talk about if the Indians go on and win this whole thing.
It does make a difference. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's got that many test runs. He's very well respected. Sure, his performances in IPL haven't been great, but what he brings to the team, it's massive.
Well, it'll be worth it if they win IPL for the first time. I mean, do you buy this support from his teammates who've publicly come out and said, you know, okay, fine, he's not performing on the field, but he's a huge motivating factor in the dressing room, and he's instilling inside us that belief that we can win?
Yeah, not really, no. I mean, look, Ricky Ponting was brought in to be the captain of this side. The idea was he was going to open, he was the captain, he was supposed to bring a lot, and that's why they were paying him all this money. If they just wanted him to be a motivational speaker, they didn't need to make him the captain of the side. He could have even just been brought in as a player, you know, and then wouldn't have been expected to play every game. Right, he could have just been a player that's there and he plays one or two games and he's there as a motivating factor. And other teams have done that with other players, and the same could have happened with Ponting. Of course, you know, the franchise has to spin this some way, turn it positive. So the players are not going to come out and say, well, it's a real drag having the old man in the dressing room bringing us down. You know, of course they're going to spin it into something positive. But I find it hilarious that, you know, Ricky Ponting is, his presence is somehow this great motivating factor for a young team. They have Sachin Tendulkar in their side, right? Sachin Tendulkar is a demigod. Ricky Ponting for the Indian player is a mere mortal, you know. So if you've got Tendulkar in the side, well, if he can't motivate you and a kind word from Tendulkar can't bring you along, well, what's Ricky Ponting going to do? So anyway, I mean, of course, they have to spin it some way. So that's what they say. But I would have preferred that Ponting would have continued to play.
I accept your point that if Tendulkar can't get you motivated, then nobody can. I mean, as you say, as a demigod, would you not accept that Ponting brings a different edge, that hard edge Australian, you know, win at all costs mentality, which might just spark one or two greater things?
Possibly, yes. If he's the captain, absolutely. But if he's not the captain, he's just somebody in the dressing room, and you know, and then you don't want too many cooks trying to force the direction of the team. When you have a captain, you have a Tendulkar, you have a Ricky Ponting, you have a manager, you have Mrs. Ambani sitting there. So who are you beholden to? Who are you listening to? I don't know. I'm a great fan, big fan of Ricky Ponting. Would really have wanted to see him do well here. And I think they just, you know, overreached a little bit and putting everything on his shoulders that he was going to be the captain and the opener. And I would have just preferred to have him as a member of the team, kind of kept playing a few select matches. And that would have gone a long way. And I think he would have probably had a better standing in his team too. And all of the things you say about bringing that kind of Aussie edge and everything, I think that would have gone a bit farther if he was still kind of in the playing mix. If he's not in the playing mix, I think that it detracts a bit from his standing.
Talking of the playing mix, let's talk about players like Rohit Sharma, Dwayne Smith, who are not the superstars like Tendulkar and like Ponting, but they're the ones who are actually getting the job done on the field. You've got to be impressed.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Rohit Sharma from his first IPL days. I think he's often compared to Tendulkar and just his upbringing and things like that. Dwayne Smith is definitely an X-factor kind of player. He's pretty strong. He can hit a ball. And it's good to see him kind of getting into a bit of form, because he's a cricketer that's formed domestically, has been very good. And then he played for the West Indies and he kind of sputtered. I think he debuted with 100 in a test match against South Africa and then sputtered away. And, you know, he's been a handy cricketer in all forms. So it's good to see him in good form for the last 3 years, I think, which has brought his call back for the West Indies. So, yeah, those guys and another guy, Dinesh Karthik, who just keeps kind of steamrolling. Puts less pressure on guys like Tendulkar and even Pollard.
Been an interesting season from a Mumbai point of view. We talked about Ponting, we talk about Tendulkar. Ponting, the subject is closed in terms of his playing effectiveness. Tendulkar, as we've described, has not had a career season as far as IPL. He scored a lot of runs 2 or 3 years ago, not so many this year. Is this helping these lesser lights to come to the foreground and take those leading roles?
Yeah, because when the bigger players or bigger name players aren't performing, you know, these players are being paid more than a fair wage, so you would expect that they would do something. You know, Rohit Sharma, just a word about him, a very, very good player. And he was kind of put in a position where he was supposed to be the next big thing in Indian batting. And he lost that position to Virat Kohli. But I think Rohit Sharma here has shown, you know, a maturity that he can play. And the fact that he can captain the side, I think, should be food for thought for Indian selectors. That even if Rohit Sharma is not your next captain, certainly having a guy with this kind of temperament is a boon for any dressing room. And so I think Rohit Sharma has really... you know, really put himself in a position where I think, you know, a comeback to the Indian team should be a no-brainer, really.
And then at the other end of the field, of course, when we're talking about experience and closing out matches, you cannot leave out of the equation Slinger Malinga, who, you know, has that ability to bowl those ridiculous Yorkers and to just intimidate batsmen. It doesn't matter how experienced they are, he has that ability.
Yeah, he bowls Yorkers and deep balls. He's pretty consistent. He's got a good slower ball, too. He doesn't go for runs. He's a miser that way. And you know, when you have somebody like Johnson at the other end, who's definitely coming into a bit of form now, looks to be one of the best bowlers around. It's a deadly combination. They seem to have the right pieces in place, and they're definitely going to be the ones to reckon with.
And perhaps that's another example. We were talking about the batters, somebody like Mitchell Johnson, who again has not been a world superstar, but again has certainly proved his worth at the very least in this edition of IPL.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, when he's not in form, it's, you're like, oh, maybe he's kind of had it. But then when he is in form and when he's bowling well, it's, you know, he's a good left arm pace bowler. He bowls good wheels. He's got a good variation. Doesn't swing it much, but he's accurate. And it's just good to see him because I think he's worked a lot. You know, he's probably gone through a bit of a low patch in the last few years. But this IPL has kind of given him a bit of a boost.
Always the shop window, this competition, isn't it?
Yeah. When he gets it wrong, he's terrible. Absolutely terrible. But when he gets it right, he's unplayable, close to unplayable. I mean, we've seen him do that for Australia and international international cricket, and your top order better watch out because he's going to be taking wickets. But when he's offline, you know, when the radar isn't quite working, you can tonk him all you want. So again, one of those, you know, one of those commodities that it's, you just never know which guy's going to show up, but you'd rather have him in your side than not have him in your side for the days when it's going to work well.
Let's talk one more point about this before we move on. And I'm thinking IPL bowlers here. I notice once again, Sunil Narine is at the top of the charts in terms of wickets taken this season. It's not going to make a difference like it did last year when he was player of the tournament, because the Kolkata Knight Riders are not going to make the playoffs despite a wealth of talent with both bat and ball. Can you, in a sentence or two, encapsulate what you think the problem has been and why they've been so inconsistent? I mean, I'm sure we could spend half an hour. We don't have half an hour on this particular subject, but they have the ingredients with the bat. They appear to have the ingredients with the ball, and yet it just hasn't worked in 2013 the way it did work just 12 months ago.
Yeah, well, could be anything really. Team chemistry is a big part of it. I think, you know, the Knight Riders don't have Wasim Akram and Dave Watmore in the back room anymore. That could possibly make a difference in terms of outlook, in terms of technical ability, in terms of even practicing in the nets. I remember there was a period, right, where when Wasim Akram was just a bowling consultant and he was bowling in the nets, and I think it was Owen Morgan who said, well, he's the best bowler that they have on their team, even though he was, you know, well past his prime. So if you're practicing against that, if you're getting tips from those types of coaches, it obviously makes a difference. Gautam Gambhir, I think, has to be in the right frame of mind for this team to do well. He's also kind of a feisty character. Things are going well, then he's probably quite inspirational. If things aren't going well, I would suspect that some of that rubs off on the team in terms of how he deals with them. So, you know, you're right. I mean, the ingredients are there, but it's always the kind of intangibles, I think, that can make a difference in how teams perform at this level. And particularly if you have other teams that are more motivated going in and are better run and are in better shape, then they're the ones that are going to come out on top. And in a tournament like this, where only four make it through, you know, the Knight Riders are going to be found wanting.
Is it something to do with the pressure of having won it all in 2012, that target on the back?
It definitely must play a big part. I mean, it's been disappointing. It's been a disappointing season. You know, they're not even close. You know, it's hard to put a finger on. I mean, Gambhir's had a decent season. Morgan showed pretty good promise. Callis, I think, hasn't been as consistent, you know, whatever the reason is this year.
Final topic before we leave you this week takes us briefly away from IPL and to South Africa, where Gary Kirsten, I see, has resigned as the national head coach and is leaving the reins to his trusted assistant, Russell Domingo. I don't know much about him. I'm not sure too many people do. So rather than talk necessarily about Domingo, are we surprised that with a World Cup sort of on the horizon, that Kirsten hasn't seen it through to that, that he's walking away now?
Well, I mean, if you look at Gary Kirsten as being as a coach, he likes to leave on a high note. He did it with India. He's doing it with South Africa. He's a different kind of coach in the sense that he doesn't like the limelight. So he's never in the forefront. You never really hear much from Gary Kirsten. He's kind of always in the back just working. And so you never really know what he's thinking or what he's up to. He doesn't do a lot of interviews and that kind of thing. But from a professional standpoint, kind of looks at where he can take a team. And he's taken them where he needs to take South Africa. And they're, you know, you can just maintain it for a while. And then after that, they're diminishing returns. So why not leave on a high note when things are working well? You've identified some players, you've got an assistant who's been working with you for a period of time, and you know your mark as a coach remains high because you know you've taken South Africa to number one. You know, you coached a very good Indian side, and you know, it's time to maybe hand it off to somebody new.
Yeah, I understand him leaving India because his family, and it's just not his culture, and he kind of did everything he had to do there. If he signed off on this guy, I think that's probably a good thing too.
Well, he certainly has. He's anointed Russell Domingo, who's been his deputy for a couple of years, who's actually been running the T20 side of things for a little while and had some success at club level with the Warriors. Not too much about Domingo himself, the final point, but talking about number twos who get the big job, and it doesn't really matter what the sport is. There are some who are ready and champing at the bit for the challenge, and the transition is seamless. And there are those who will always be a great number two, the link between the head coach and the players, but when given the top job, it never comes off. I guess we don't know yet, and we won't know for some time with Domingo, but I suppose if he has Kirsten's blessing, then we have to sit and watch and wait to see whether he actually can do the job.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and it's kind of a unique situation in international cricket where you kind of have a deputy or an assistant coach who can kind of take the reins and who's kind of trained under, so to speak, the head coach and a player like Gary Kirsten. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the players react to that. It's one thing to have somebody as an assistant, but if you've got a coach, and he's young, he's under 40, and you know, hasn't played international cricket and doesn't have the kind of pedigree that a Gary Kirsten had. So I don't know, does a Jacques Callis go to Russell Domingo for a technical help if he's struggling with some aspect of his batting? I don't know, maybe. It's going to be interesting. And in South Africa, I mean, there was a period when they had Ray Jennings as a coach and, you know, everybody hated him. Sort of, I shouldn't say that, but there were players who didn't really like working with him because of the way his attitude was. And it makes a difference to the chemistry of the South African side, I think, where you do have players of different cultural backgrounds, and it can, for certain players, make a difference who their coach is and what the reporting structure is. So I'd be interested to see how that's going to play out.
I don't see it being too much of a drawback. He's been in the dressing room. He's been with the team. They know him. If Kirsten thought, you know, there's going to be a bit of animosity or didn't think this guy was going to do the job, he would have never have pushed him through. So I think he'll do okay. And the fact that he hasn't played international cricket doesn't necessarily count him out with his opinion. There's guys who are very, very good at identifying flaws in cricketers that, you know, if you look at even the Australian batting coach now is Michael Divenuto, who only played a very, very short period of international cricket, but he's obviously respected for what he's done.
Maybe what Jacques Callis could do would be to listen and learn from Russell Domingo, because maybe not too many years from now, Jacques Callis may be looking to be the head coach of South Africa. Great insight as ever. Thank you for your time, Zubin Sukari and Faraz Sawa. That's all the time we have this week. Don't forget you can catch all the IPL action as the race to the playoffs continue on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. Cricket Central is a Titan GSG production. Executive producer, Rathan Morthy. The editor is Jeff Eden. I'm Nigel Reed. Until next time, thanks for listening.